Hello and welcome to the TES News Podcast. I'm reporter Catherine Love, and joining me today is news reporter Amy Gibbons. Hi, Amy.
Hello.
And deputy news editor Mary Louise Clues. Hi, Mary.
Hi there.
And news editor Will Stewart. Hello.
Hello.
So it's been a very busy week in education news again, with some major announcements on the plans for the COVID recovery catch-up for pupils, schools reopening, and also the final plans for GCSE and A-level grading this year were released this week as well. But the first major announcement this week came on schools opening more widely on 8th March, and known as the Big Bang approach, this could be a little bit controversial, and Sage Minutes revealed this week that this could possibly increase the transmission rate by 50%. Mary, what are the key concerns from teachers and teachers' unions about reopening?
Well, teachers are already warning against this so-called Big Bang approach before the announcement on Monday. So we weren't sure whether the Prime Minister would actually go for the full return of all pupils, but he insisted on Monday in this announcement that it would be safe for all pupils to return on March the 8th. Unions were very quick, especially the National Education Union, the largest teachers union, to criticise the move, saying that the Prime Minister announced that there would be testing put in place, that secondary school pupils should wear masks and measures like that. But as the NEU said, where are the Nightingale classrooms? Where are the other measures that we've been saying for months that are needed to help us make sure that classrooms are COVID secure? And pointed out, obviously, to the Sage Minutes, the government expert advisors actually recommended a staggered return for pupils, and saying it would be much safer to do so. So there are concerns out there. There's no sign yet that we're going to see teachers refusing to go in under health and safety concerns like we saw at Christmas, just after Christmas. But there are very real concerns out there. So this is a moving story, and we'll see how the unions react. I mean, I think, everybody wants to kind of get schools over, wants to get pupils back into school, but As unions have pointed out and teachers have pointed out, this needs to be a sustainable reopening of schools. They want to avoid opening and then bubbles going home, teachers being off sick, and all those things that we saw during the autumn term last year. But at the moment, the government are sticking to the line. Gavin Williamson was in the House of Commons yesterday saying schools are safe, and are saying that the testing regime that they've asked secondary schools to put in place, testing pupils three times in the first week, would mean that they could keep COVID levels down.
It is a different situation to before Christmas as well, isn't it? I mean, we Charlotte, our colleague, did that great piece about where COVID infection levels are supposed to go, and obviously it's in an exact science, and people don't know exactly where it is, but it's on the way down, isn't it? Whereas before Christmas, it was a new variant, and it was raging, and it was. So I'm just thinking,
yes, absolutely,
how teachers will feel about getting going back, and I think in that, the absolute safety terms, it seems different, and also the vaccine must play some kind of role as well, because some of the most vulnerable teachers will presumably have been vaccinated. Mm.
The counterpoint to that is that when schools reopened in September, Charlotte pointed out in that piece, actually, the levels were much, much lower than they are at the moment in terms of cases. But obviously, we didn't have the vaccine then, so there are all sorts of factors in play, as you say, Will. But there are still very real concerns out there.
I think one of the other things, about it's not just solely concerns about sort of the safety in itself, and you've sort of touched on this, but one of the things that I've seen raised by the teaching unions especially has been the worries about the logistics of carrying out all of those tests, three tests on site when pupils return, and then I think one at home as well before then we move to this twice weekly home testing. So so that's going to be, as well as there perhaps being some concerns about going back from the safety point of view, that's going to be a really interesting start to the term for especially many of the teachers trying to organise all of those tests. We did a story this week which indicated that schools will have to carry out, judging by the numbers, one test every 5.5 minutes, which is pretty quick, I think, and it's kind of raised some concerns. So yeah, there's a lot of logistical hurdles to cross, as well as those safety kind of concerns.
The whole idea
No, I was just going to say one of our columnists this week pointed out we're dealing with teenage students here as well, you know, sort of trying to bang them through, you know, testing, kind of sort of feeling, you know, sort of the logistics of doing it, kind of dropping the test, you know, all this sort of stuff. It's going to be tricky to keep to that timing at very least. Sorry, Will.
Well, similarly, I was just going to say that the whole idea that you should rely on those tests to make schools safe, it remains really controversial, doesn't it? Is the idea that they're going to be more reliable if you're testing all the time, so you might miss some, but even so, you still run the risk of bringing students in that might have the virus when before you wouldn't have taken any chances, I think. So
Yeah, there's always a risk with those tests, I think, because we know obviously they're not necessarily even close to 100% accurate, so you can carry out as many as you like, but it's not necessarily a guarantee, which I think will mean that regardless of how many they do, there will be some doubts there and some worries about bringing pupils back in. But it's certainly an effort to make schools safer and to try and ensure that they don't sort of have to send whole year groups home and things, you know, following tests.
Isn't the idea that these tests find asymptomatic cases, so you're kind of putting an extra check in and saying, well, we'll kind of find someone who's got the virus and send them home before, yeah, like you say, Amy, before they've had a chance to kind of sit with their classmates and spread the virus. So, it's not being used to replace isolation. As was being suggested before Christmas, I think. So that's the key change there. But yeah, we'll see how it goes. I think Gavin Williams has said yesterday that 97% of schools now have their testing facilities up and running.
They're pretty confident, I think, that the schools are ready to go on it. But I think kind of the indication that we've had from school leaders is that regardless if they've kind of got the facilities in place, it's still going to be a massive logistical challenge, and it is an extra headache on top of
They've asked for 2 weeks, haven't they, I think, to kind of phase returns of pupils over a two-week period. DfE have said you can have flexibility for a week, and if you need more time, you can get them in before March the 8th, if necessary.
Yeah.
I think that'd be quite a challenge. But
they are allowed to start testing, and what day are we on? Friday? So from next week, in advance of the kids all going back to school on the 8th. It's all still sort of voluntary and at the discretion of the schools and colleges, which we should say. But yeah, they can get going from next week, but they've got to make sure that all of the pupils social distance and that they go home straight away after the test. So that can maybe give some people a chance to get a head start.
It definitely seems like the kind of the March 8th date, while the sort of headline date for reopening, that will, you know, be very flexible. And, you know, certainly for larger secondary schools, exactly as you've all been saying, it's going to take sort of quite a bit longer than that. The second sort of big announcement of the week was also on the government's plans for its COVID recovery catch-up plan. So on Wednesday, we heard that various kind of measures will be put in place, for example, summer schools, a recovery premium for pupils, and also some early language support that would all feature in this package said to be worth £705 million. But Amy, what are some of the concerns about that plan?
So I think broadly any new money for catch-up is welcomed, and you know, regardless of how much it is. I think the concerns so far have been that we don't actually really have the full picture of where the money's coming from, and also exactly kind of the ways it's going to be spent. So we do know that it's going to be sent out to schools now on kind of split up into lots of different segments, which is something actually that Jeff Barton, head of the Association of School and College Leaders, he criticised it being sort of salami sliced. It is kind of split up into these segments so that schools do get some flexibility in the way that it's spent, but also there will be some money put into a continuation of the National Tutoring Programme. So there's lots of different aspects to it. One of the first things to note is that there was this big announcement to say it was worth, you know, around £700 million. £300 million of that money had already been announced last month. So now we're looking, you know, £405 million then is kind of the new money. And we did a little bit of digging into that to try and find out where exactly it was coming from. And the DfE haven't been able, or are essentially refusing to tell us whether it is new money from the Treasury or whether it's possible that it came from existing education budgets. So that's one of the big questions that still remains. We've tried to find out and we'll continue to, but it's unclear at the moment.
We should give the context of that, particularly about why that's particularly important, is because Sir Kevin Collins, the Recovery Commissioner, or catch-up czar, as he's sometimes referred to, when you were interviewed him, wasn't it, Amy? And you asked him, would there be new money from the Treasury? And he was very clear that there would need to be. So if it isn't, then the government hasn't kind of certainly done what he was led to believe. And I guess the other thing is, if it's not new money from the Treasury, then, you know, you're helping education, but it's obviously been shifted around from somewhere. So something else in education is going to miss out, and there's not, you know, it's not a wash with money. So I doubt that could happen without there being some damage done. But we don't know, do we?
Right. So Kevin, he did say that there would be new money from the Treasury needed. So we'll wait to see exactly whether that is where it's coming from. The other thing is, it was an interesting interview with Gavin Williamson on Radio 4, I think it was, a couple of days ago, where he was asked about the reach of the catch-up fund, because so far the government's talked about around 120,000 pupils benefiting from the catch-up tutoring scheme. And I think, you know, the aim was to find out whether they'd be reaching perhaps the 1.4 million children on free school meals, or how, you know, how many people essentially they hope to help with this extra money. And Gavin Williamson wasn't really able to say. He talked about this 120,000 figure, and he said something like it's hoped that there will be a considerable expansion to that number. But when asked to kind of put a further figure on it, he wasn't able to. So there's another area where we do need, I think, a little bit more clarity at this stage, just to know. Great to hear about the extra money, but in real terms, what does that mean for schools and for those people specifically?
I'd imagine the truth is that they haven't, that it's done in terms of how much money they've got rather than what the need is. Do you know what I mean? I just mean that they're scratching around to find what money they can, and that's what defines it, rather than saying, right, this much needs to be done, therefore we need to find this much. That's what it feels like anyway. I mean, there have been suggestions, haven't there? I can't remember exactly who said it, but in a couple of the things that were released this week, there was a kind of nod to there'll have to be something more in the long term, and, you know, with the kind of implication that there would be more money eventually. But you know, if that's going to happen, it makes you wonder why they're not being more specific now. You know, why not say that now? Why not reassure people? Which makes me think that they're finding it hard to find the money. But
it's not. I mean, it's not a lot per school so far, is it? I think the Education Policy Institute said that it was a very modest sum, because I think it's like £6,000 for on average for primaries, £22,000 for secondaries. So given the kind of costs they're going to have to deal with kind of during and after the pandemic, it's not a huge sum per school.
It was interesting yesterday. Oh, sorry, Amy.
All I was going to say is that I think that that's relating specifically to this recovery premium, which is something like 302 million, I think. So there's a little bit extra money in there as well that may go, you know, may reach schools in other ways. But yeah, that's absolutely right. This new recovery premium is only about, what I hear, like you say, it was around 6,000 for primaries, isn't it? And a little bit more for secondaries. So yeah, sorry, Mary Lou, go on.
No, I was just going to say, this just reminds me, I was listening to a debate in the House of Commons yesterday, and when Gavin Williamson was going through all of this, and he was asked, he was talking about exams, which we're getting onto, but he was also asked about catch-up, and an MP asked him about, because the department has said that the money could be used to pay teachers over as well over the summer to staff summer schools. And MP asked him, so £6,000. I said, does the education secretary know how much teachers earn, or what teachers' salaries are, and kind of sort of tongue in cheek, but you know, kind of suggesting, well, how much time could you pay for a teacher's time with that money? So There's going to have to be some extra funds found for this.
And as you just mentioned, Mary, the other sort of big announcement this week was on exams and the final plans for A levels and GCSEs. Do you want to tell us about that, Will?
Yeah. So we had the consultation. I think consultation ran for a couple of weeks, and then been waiting for maybe a month since. What we've got is pretty much what was originally set out with all its strengths and weaknesses. So essentially, teacher assessment, but with help from exam boards. The exam board material, I think that people have written this up as kind of mini exams, and there have been fears from teachers that they would be forced to kind of administer an exam system rather than the exam boards doing it. I think if you read the consultation, it was never portrayed quite like that. It always sounded like it was going to be an optional, and this was material they could draw on. And that's what's turned out. So that's what we've got. So teachers will have these exam board questions they can use, but they're also expected to use a range of evidence. So, you know, work students have already done, coursework, as much as they can across the board. The other key points, again, that have been said all the way along, there will be no algorithm, which raises quite a few questions, but there's obviously a huge effort from ministers to make sure they see the algorithm as, and I think they're right, politically, it was a real difficulty last year. So they're trying to draw a huge distance between last year and what's happening this year. So they're very clear that won't happen. The big changes, well, they're not huge changes, but the main ones are the results will be released in early August rather than early July, which is what was originally proposed, brought forward slightly to allow more time for appeals. And appeals is a second significant change, particularly for teachers, because the original consultation proposed teachers broadly dealing with appeals, you know, whether they're in school, whether they were teachers in the same school, in different schools, which on top of everything else, you know, on top of having to go through the stress of grading and all the workload involved in that, the adding appeals as well seemed like a big ask. Yeah. So I think teachers will be relieved about that. I think possibly the biggest thing about this, what's come out this week, is almost what's not there. Mm-hmm. And that is there's an absence of any real suggestion of the standard that teachers should grade against. So there's a very kind of vague, it's built in that they say the internal quality assurance that schools must conduct for the grading must ensure that they're not out of line with where the grades were in previous years. And I think that's been said in some of the Ofqual guidance as well, but the phrase is previous years, and it doesn't specify a year. And for me, that raises a huge question, because, you know, where do you look back to? Do you look back to 2020? And to 2020 is obviously vastly different to all the years before. And I think without guidance on that, every school is presumably going to use 2020. So, which brings us on to, sorry, there's a lot to to talk about, but that brings us on to the main thing that's come out this week about where there might be problems, which is it will lead to vast grade inflation. And frankly, I think they're probably right. What do you think about that, Catherine? Do you think there's going to be?
I think you're right. I think there will be grade inflation. And it's I think partly because as you've just said, schools so far haven't really been given advice about where to peg these grades, and in fact, the advice from DfE and Ofqual appears to be to not really peg them specifically to any one year. And obviously, of course, there's inflation kind of built into any system of teacher assessment anyway, because usually you would have some kind of norm referencing where students would, that's sort of why we get the forgotten third, where a third of students don't pass maths and English GCSE because of that norm referencing. Whereas if you're a teacher assessing a class, it's very difficult to sort of ascribe whether someone would get a grade three or a grade four in the same way. And so there's a kind of natural grade inflation built into teacher assessment when it's done individually.
You're always going to give them the benefit of the doubt, aren't you? If it's a split decision, you're always, you're going to care about your students, so you're going to push it upwards. So if everybody, no one's like going to be, I'm sure they won't be, but no, it's not like you have to have people wildly inflating grades or anything like that. Mm. As you say, sorry, I've cut you, but there's
and also just that you don't know. So I think in an exam system in a normal year, there's always surprises. There's always students who outperform where they might have expected to be, or students who underperform on the day. And if you're doing a system of teacher assessment, you can't possibly predict who those students are in a class. So it is going to have that little bit of inflation. But I think that what Dame Alison Peacock was saying today as well in our story on this was kind of some real fears from the profession about whether the government seems to have given teachers all this responsibility for grading this year, and is that storing up some blame later on on results day when there is a lot of inflation look, we've given you teacher assessment and this is what's happened. So it is a very difficult thing to do.
Yeah, that's it, isn't it? They're saying we trust teachers. Yeah, it is kind of all on them a bit. The other thing that I thought was interesting was the story that you dug out of the stuff that came out yesterday, Catherine, about the fact that some of these exam board questions, which I think teachers, to be honest, I think I know they're optional, but I'd be surprised if teachers don't use them, because you're gonna be asked to justify your decisions, so you're gonna want something. But anyway, those exam board papers, a lot of them are going to be defunct ones, old ones that don't even relate to the current qualifications. Do you want to tell us about that?
Yeah, so I'm not sure it'll be a lot of them, but it's for some of the subjects that they've basically said that it's going to be like a book of potential questions that exam boards give to schools to assess students, and the majority of questions are going to be taken from past papers, and then there are going to be sort of some unseen new materials for each subject. But what did come out of those documents, as you've just said yesterday, was that for the subjects most recently reformed, there just aren't going to be enough past papers to use. So the GCSE and A-level reforms started coming in 2015, but for some subjects, they weren't actually reformed with exam papers until a few years later. So there just aren't enough past papers to actually select from. And in that instance, which was a really interesting detail in what came out yesterday, they said that for those subjects, they might have to use legacy specifications. So material from exam papers from before that reform, which is quite a strange idea, because obviously the students who would then be assessed on those have been studying the new specification. So I'm not entirely sure how that would work, but it does suggest that in terms of sort of having a wealth of materials to draw on for this particular task, that the exam boards maybe don't have that, and that you know, that there are for some subjects there's going to be a scarcity of resources that they can actually use.
There's some obvious tensions there about what were used as well. Like reading the stuff from Ofqual, it seems fairly naked because it basically says, in terms of whether you should use past, you know, forget about the defunct papers, but whether you should use past paper questions or new material. And it says there will be some new questions because the education secretary wants them in there. But it goes on, I felt quite pointedly to say, but there will be no, the mark schemes for these will be untested. Mm-hmm. And therefore, so almost feels like they're kind of setting themselves up for the big row afterwards. You know, you said we had to use these, but we didn't really think they'd work anyway.
I mean, I think again, it's sort of as you were just saying, well, in terms of kind of the actual choice that teachers are being presented with there, I think, you know, while those sort of unseen or new materials might be included, for the past paper questions, there's going to be kind of exemplar answers at every grade. There is obviously a tested and tried and tested mark scheme for those years. And so as a teacher, I mean, why would you choose the new material? When presumably most of the country isn't going to choose that. And as you just said, we've heard that the mark schemes aren't tested. So that would seem to be putting your students at a disadvantage. And so again, it's kind of like a choice that's there for teachers, but logically there would be no reason for taking it.
Yeah. Feels like a bit, yeah. It's the old cliche, isn't it? There's no perfect solution, but it does really with all the grade inflation and all the burden on teachers, it does feel like it's heading towards another bit of a car crash, I think.
Is it a wild west? Is it going to be a wild west? Is that what Halpin said?
Yeah. I mean, you know, to some extent, I mean, the teaching unions are fairly pleased, aren't they? Because the idea, they didn't like the idea of having the algorithm and having their grade second guess. So they come out of it all right. And I guess students will feel if there is grade inflation, then it's better because they'll have higher grades. But I think as a kind of an exams geek, if you look at the whole purpose of them and what they're supposed to achieve, it's not going to mean anything common anymore. I think by the time we finish with another year of this.
It's, I mean, there's definitely still a lot of unanswered questions still there for schools. And they're also not going to find, they're not going to have those exam materials until kind of before the Easter holidays. So another thing that has been raised by teachers is in terms of the timing of this, how they're going to have the time to use these and then moderate internally and submit them to boards. On a more positive note, finally, We did see this week that one school in Welshpool, that the school's teachers have been greeted by a wall of supportive messages after the half term, with lots of students posting thank you notes and cards and pictures of rainbows to show their appreciation for teachers. Mary, I think you were looking into this.
Yeah, no, it's just a really nice story, actually, because as we know in Wales, the younger years, primaries of preschool started going back after half term Monday. And it looks like parents organised a big tribute to greet teachers when they arrived, just drawings from the pupils and poems and so on, which were attached to the gate, so there's a big wall of colour, as you say, Catherine, to welcome in. The head teacher, Justine Baldwin, said that she was actually in tears and she arrived because it was just such a nice thing to come into school to see. We have an example of a poem that was called, or a passage from poem, "Not All Superheroes Can Fly, Are Strong and Wear Capes." Do you want to hear the rest?
And yeah,
do.
Yeah.
"They teach our children and tend to their scrapes. When falling in the playground or help ease their fears, we know they are safe as you wipe away the tears. Our children and us are lucky to have you. Thank you, staff, for all that you do." Oh, that's nice, isn't it?
Then,
you can organise one when we get back to Tez Towers, Will.
We want a message.
Awesome.
Well, that is that's a really kind of heartwarming message, and it does show that regardless of the kind of all the different announcements that have come out this week for schools and teachers, that for students and families, their work in the pandemic is very, very much appreciated. And I think, you know, families are really aware of how much teachers have been doing to help support all their students during such a difficult time. I think we might have rambled on for long enough, but we will see you all next week with, I'm sure, many more announcements on education. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.